We are continuing in a longer series that has three major parts. Today, we're continuing in the justice segment of this series. And this is just already, as we've been talking about the theme of justice, I've been getting responses back from some of you just indicating how justice is just one of those things that we feel, especially in its absence. We feel justice, especially in its absence. Last week, I'll remind you where we began. Last week, we began by looking at how the scriptures teach throughout that God is just. And this week, the theme will be God's justice. So God is just, and that demands our reverence. I'll explain that, obviously, as we go. But let me give you a quick reminder of where we've been first with the next slide. Deuteronomy 32:4 just emphasized this very clearly. He is the rock, his deeds are perfect. Everything he does is just and fair. He is a faithful God who does no wrong. How just and upright he is. And certainly sometimes in our lives, we will come to a point where we may feel that God isn't being fair, that things might not be right, but we explored some of that as well. And let me just remind you with the 5 points we had here. We saw how God's justice is seen in that sense of our injustice. And that comes because we are created in the image of God. We are made to be like him. And so he wants things to be just and perfect and true and right. And so when we sense injustice, that's an indication of his justice and how he's created us in his image. We also saw God's justice seen in the law, and how it represents his character, his goodness, how he provides for and asks his people to provide for those who are in need, to do things in a way that's fair and true and honest. We talked about how God's justice is seen in consequences, how those are extended to people who break God's law. And of course, we said that none of us are able to live up to it. We also saw God's justice seen in how he provides and establishes rulers and authorities, but ultimately, we see how God's justice is seen in Jesus. Now, what's interesting, as you look back on the other four, thinking about Jesus, we see that Jesus entered into an unjust experience of the world with us. And Jesus experienced injustice by wrongfully being convicted to a sentence of death. Jesus also fulfilled the law. He was the only one who's ever perfectly lived and thereby fulfilled all that God had asked his people to do and represented the character of God. We also saw that Jesus took on our consequences for all of our wrongdoing, and that ultimately, one day, he will rule and reign with authority, judging over all things with justice and fairness. We see that Jesus is the ultimate expression of God's justice for us, and he brings it all together as well. But that sense of injustice is very strong for us, and today we're going to turn more to our response to God's justice. And I want to take you back to the way that God responds whenever people in the Bible say he's being unjust. He responds by taking them back to the fact that he's the creator. And if we'll look at that verse here now from Isaiah 45:18-19. For the Lord is God, and he created the heavens and earth and put everything in place. He made the world to be lived in, not to be a place of empty chaos. I am the Lord, he says, and there is no other. I, the Lord, speak only what is true and declare only what is right. So whenever there is a challenge to God's justice, he reminds them, I'm the one who made the world. The world is based around me. Your sense of trueness, your sense of fairness, your sense of rightness is based on what I have created and the way I've intended it to be. There's a further concept that extends that, and that's where we're going to go today. And here on the next slide, we see in Proverbs 3:19, continuing along the theme of how God created the world and what that means for us with justice, rightness, fairness. It says, by wisdom, the Lord founded the earth. By understanding, he created the heavens. So he did all of this creation with wisdom. He didn't just throw it together, as it said. It wasn't meant to be a place of chaos. He wisely crafted the world to work in a certain way. And then throughout the scriptures, there's this idea that we are wise if we recognize that and fear him, which is a word that I'll have to explain here in a moment. But Psalm 111, verse 10 expresses this well. It says, fear of the Lord is the foundation of true wisdom. All who obey his commandments will grow in wisdom. Fear of the Lord. Now, some of you grew up in churches where fear was like part of the steady diet of what you heard from the preacher. There was fire and brimstone. There was the threat of hell. And truths were declared in a way that were meant to, well, to scare us into heaven. And there is certainly truth being declared in all of that. Perhaps the church has gone too far the other direction in not addressing that sense of holy fear that we should have before God. So I want to take a moment to explain it, because for many of us to think of fearing the Lord, that seems, well, it seems scary. It seems intimidating. And I want to make sure that we understand clearly what this is, because it's a foundation, it says, for wisdom. Real wisdom only comes when we have that kind of relationship with God, when we fear the Lord. Now, there are different types of fear, and that's part of where the confusion lies. There is the kind of fear which is terror, and many of us know that. But there's also the kind of fear which is we don't want to offend someone that we love or care about. You know that fear as well, I think. These are two different expressions of fear. Now, I was thinking about this in terms of sort of the human experience of how do we experience fear in more that second way. And you'll remember when Will and Kate, the Royals, came to PEI, just how everyone was, you know, just trying to be so careful to do everything in just the right way, to be on our best behavior so that they saw the best of PEI. Were some of you around during that time? I remember hearing that there was a road, I think it's the one out to Dalve, that they repaved it like the night before or something, just so that it would be a smooth ride for them into that place. And, you know, even today, I've driven by there and I thought, oh, look at this beautiful road. And as soon as you pass the hotel, it's back to the old road. I also think about those moments, and perhaps you remember them. Perhaps they've been a long time ago, or perhaps they've been more recent, where you went to meet, you know, your girlfriend's parents or your boyfriend's parents. And there's that kind of holy fear of not wanting to offend. And there's a sense of trepidation. There's a sense of wanting to be on your best behavior and making sure you get it right, you know. But there's something healthy and good in that. It's a respect that's being displayed. And I think both of the aspects are true of God. That we should have a sense of fear about God in the sense of terror. We truly should be afraid of Him if we are not living according to His ways. We have a right, and we should be rightfully afraid if we are an enemy of His. If we're living in opposition to God, we should be afraid of Him because He can destroy us eternally. Also, there is a sense in which we should have that kind of fear of God where we simply don't want to offend Him because we love Him. We want to show that honor and respect for Him in every way. I heard a person one time teaching on the topic of fear and said that God is the only safe place to put our fear. Because God's intention is not to destroy us. That's not what He wants for us. And so if we place our fear in Him, we can trust that it will be well served for us. We sing this in the song Amazing Grace, one of the lines, 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear. Grace taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. There is a kind of fear that is right and appropriate because it is a sign of respect and reverence and awe for God. And that is the type of fear that is best for us to consider today. And so there is a type of reverent fear, holy fear, that God has for us and says that if we live from that, we will understand His justice better. If we live from that, it will give us wisdom. If we live from that, we will have life Now, if you still don't quite follow with all this, because it still seems weird, I want to help you see what the scriptures actually say about this fear of the Lord, because it's quite clearly not talking about the sense of terror as much. Proverbs 14:27 says, "Fear of the Lord is a life-giving fountain. It offers escape from the snares of death." So this is clearly a different type of fear than the terror that we associate with, you know, seeing a mouse or Halloween or whatever. This is a different type of fear. Proverbs 19:23 says, "Fear of the Lord leads to life, bringing security and protection from harm." So we begin our topic today, we begin our discussion by thinking about what it means to fear the Lord, to have that holy, reverent fear for Him. And living out of that, how that plays out in justice. Now, the first point that I want us to begin to see is that fear of the Lord means living justly towards others. You see, the fear of the Lord means that if we're wise, we're recognizing that because God made the world, we should live in the way that He instructs us to do so. So fear of the Lord means living justly towards others. A relationship with God necessitates a certain kind of relationship with the people around us. And let's look clearly at some of these verses that follow. Leviticus 25:17. Again, we're going through all of the scriptures here today. And I do mean all of them. We're going to be here till about 4 o'clock. Just kidding. If you're new here or a guest, I was joking. It's going to be about 3 at the latest. So Leviticus 25:17 says this. "Show your fear of God by not taking advantage of each other. I'm the Lord your God." See, the relationship that we have with God requires that we treat other people in certain ways. Because if God is just, then we must be just in the way that we act towards others as well. Show your fear of God by not taking advantage of each other. 2 Chronicles 19:7. Now, this is speaking to those who rule and judge over the people. It says, "Fear the Lord and judge with integrity, for the Lord our God does not tolerate perverted justice, partiality, or the taking of bribes." There's a clear sense in which the fear of the Lord requires a certain kind of relationship with the people around us. And because God is just, we must have a reverence for Him that results in a new relationship with other people. So that's first. Next, fear of the Lord means more than keeping the law. Now, we talked back in our series on freedom about how none of us is able to live up to the requirements of the law. It's simply impossible because of the sinful, fallen human condition. It's only by the grace of God that we become more than that. He lifts us up by the Spirit to do all that He's called us to do. But fear of the Lord means more than simply following the law. Matthew 23:23. This is a moment now where we could rightly experience the terror or fear of God, in a sense, because Jesus is rebuking, in strong terms, those who should know better. Jesus is speaking and He says, "What sorrow awaits you teachers of religious law and you Pharisees." Again, these are the teachers of religious law. These are the ones who know the law of God intimately and try to practice it thoroughly. Jesus says, "Hypocrites, for you are careful to tithe even the tiniest income from your herb gardens, but you ignore the more important aspects of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. You should tithe, yes, but do not neglect the more important things." Now, if you don't know that word tithe, what that means is it was the habit and practice of taking 10% of whatever we have made, whatever income, whatever we've received, 10% and giving that back to God. That's a practice that many Christians still to this day continue. It's not sort of a law mandated that we give back to the church 10% of what He's given to us, but it's a good practice. It's a good way for us to consider. In fact, if anything Jesus has done, He's shown us that He sort of raises the stakes on anything in the Old Testament. But what He's saying to the religious teachers, of the religious law teachers, the Pharisees, He says, "You're being so careful to take 10% of even the herbs in your garden." I bought a basil plant this week. I decided I wanted to have some fresh basil in my house. The only I couldn't find one of those little packages of fresh basil. I only could find the plant, so I bought the plant. But can you imagine how ridiculous it would be is every time I cut up the basil and got it prepared for the meal, if I set 10% of it aside and brought it to church for you all and put it in the offering plate? Well, there is a sense, Jesus is saying, is you're being so careful to follow the law that you've missed its point entirely. Because you aren't generous to the people around you. You're not just in the way that you treat them. You're not merciful to them. And you're not demonstrating a faith. Now, listen to those words and remember them, because when we get to the end, those words are going to come back and sound familiar. But justice, mercy, faith. These are the more important aspects of the law, and that's what Jesus says to them. You've been so careful to follow the law, but you have missed the more important things. And so following God, fearing God, is far more than simply keeping the law, which we can't do apart from the grace of God. Next, we see that fear of the Lord means more than religion and worship. We'll say, well, how does a relationship with God become more than religion? How does that become more than worship? I want you to listen carefully to this next section. We're going to spend a few slides looking at Amos chapter 5. Listen to what God is saying to his people Israel. I hate all your show and pretense, the hypocrisy of your religious festivals and solemn assemblies. I will not accept your burnt offerings and grain offerings. I won't even notice all your choice peace offerings. Away with your noisy hymns of praise. I will not listen to the music of your harps. This is God saying, I don't like the way you're worshiping. Stop with all the noisy guitars and those loud, crazy devil drums. Stop playing with all of this and stop bringing me your generous offerings. Stop putting that big check in the offering plate. Stop doing all this because it's show and pretense. It's hypocrisy. I don't care if you set aside special days, and I don't care if you go a long distance away traveling just to worship me. None of that matters. Why in the world would God say that to them? Why would God tell them not to worship? Why would God say that the music they're playing is abhorrent to him? Why would he say that what they're doing is not pleasing to him? Well, the verses before tell us the story. And the verses before say this. Amos 5, 7, 10, and 12. You twist justice, making a bitter pill for the oppressed. You treat the righteous like dirt. How you hate honest judges. How you despise people who tell the truth. You trample the poor, stealing their grain through taxes and unfair rent. You oppress good people by taking bribes and deprive the poor of justice in the courts. God is more concerned. What is more important than following the law? It's having a heart of justice, mercy, and faith. What's more important than worshiping God? Worshiping God. God says far more than religion and worshiping God, far more important is the way that we actually treat the people around us. Because if we can't treat them well, then we don't really love him. If we can't treat them well, we don't really fear him. If we can't treat the people around us with dignity and truth in a way that is right and honest, then we do not really know God. And he doesn't want us worshiping him. He only wants worship that is honest and true and coming from that place where we recognize with humility that we're all hypocrites. He only wants our worship if we come to it from a place of loving others around us. In humility. This is hard for us to hear, but we need to recognize what God is telling us. That his heart is first and foremost about these things in relationship with him and with those around. It is not enough to be even a religious teacher doing all the law that God has asked to do. That is not enough. It's not enough to go to the biggest, most expensive, most exciting festival of worship there ever was. That's not what pleases God. What pleases God is a life that's lived in holy fear of him, expressed in an honest, true, right relationship with others. That's what he wants. In fact, some of you will remember when Jesus is asked, what is the greatest commandment? Because there were 613. Jesus said, love the Lord your God, and the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. Love, relationship, of honor, trust, respect, All of that together is the type of thing that God is looking for. Amos, back just continuing this, what is it that he wraps up that whole chapter with? Again, he said, "Away with your noisy hymns of praise. I will not listen to the music of your harps. Instead, I want to see a mighty flood of justice, an endless river of righteous living." That means that in our lives, we don't get away with just paving to the hotel. Did you hear me, church? Did you catch what I'm saying? We don't get away with just paving to the hotel. Fearing God means that we treat everything with the type of dignity and respect and attention, because God sees it all. We can't fool him by dressing up nice on Sunday. We don't trick God into thinking that we're okay by saying and doing all that the pastor asked us to do. Now, I don't want to say that one, but I have to. You see, fear of the Lord is a place of our heart, not simply the outward expression. And it begins in our heart in relationship with God, the way that we have awe and reverence for him, but it's expressed in the way that we relate to the people around us. God wants to see a mighty flood of justice, an endless river of righteous living, long before he wants to see us righteously praising him in his sanctuary. The worship of God doesn't begin at Sunday morning at 10 a.m. It continues the week around. And if we are not people who seek to honor God with all of our lives, then he wants none of it. And that can be hard for us to hear. But the fear of the Lord is far more than religion. It's far more than worship. It is righteous living 24/7. On to the next. This is expressed very clearly in the New Testament as well. In James, there's quite a bit of this. James was written by the brother of Jesus. Now, I often like to say, you know, if you come to believe at a certain point in time that your brother is actually God, that's a pretty strong indication to me that something was happening there. Because my brother, not so much. I'm not saying anything wrong about my brother, but we're all human, right? Like, what would it take for you to believe that one of your siblings was God? Well, for James, it took seeing him rise again 3 days after he'd been killed. So James is a believer. And James writes in James 1:27, "Pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you." What is the kind of worship that God would ask us to do here in Stratford? I think we've already been doing it, and I think there is more to do. I think pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means that we send pants to Glenn Stewart Elementary. I think it means that we work to find benevolent funds to support people who are sick or going through a job loss or something like that. I think it's that we as a church, we find true and genuine pure religion in the way that we gather together in community to serve our neighbors, taking a meal to them when they're sick, showing up and being present in their lives. It means going to a senior's home and visiting the poor person who's got no family left. Pure and genuine religion, the kind of real religion that God loves, is where it's expressed in generosity towards other people, in kindness, in mercy, in faith towards other people. These are the things that God loves. It means taking care of those who are marginalized, oppressed. It means sacrificing our money so that a family can come from another country and be safer here in Canada. We as a church have done some of these things, and yet there's more to do. The poor are always among us. And yet it's in these moments, in these situations, in these actual things where the rubber meets the road, that we see real faith, real life, real religion at work. That's what God loves. James 3:13 says, "If you're wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. See, humility is the proper response to wisdom. Remember, wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. So what is the proper response? It's humility. Recognizing how great and incredibly powerful God is, that he could squash us like a bug at any particular moment, and yet he doesn't. There's this reverent fear that we have before God because he draws close to us. You know, if you were, some of you maybe have even had this experience, you've been with one of those sort of wild animals like an elephant or a lion, and you, if you are there that close to them, sometimes even with glass, there is a sense of reverent awe that you have. There's this kind of holy fear. You do not want to be hurt and injured. And if they draw close to you, there's a sense of, wow, this is a beautiful thing. I've got to be careful not to ruin this. So here we are reminded that real wisdom comes from fearing God. Real wisdom means that we're humble before him. That we don't look at others in a way that says we're better than them when they're in need. We simply look, you know, we're all weak and poor before God. And yet, what a blessing it is to be able to share what we have with each other so that we can all be stronger by his grace, by his riches. So James calls us to see this clearly, what real religion is like, what real worship is. And it means caring for the people around us who are in need and who are marginalized. And then I think we've got one more, is it? Micah 6:8-9. This is another book. The entire book of Micah is talking about people who the leaders, especially of Israel, who have been getting rich on the backs of the poor people underneath them. They've been taking advantage of others. We see that type of injustice everywhere in our world today. There's been a large discussion about Amazon, how Jeff Bezos is now one of the greatest billionaires in the world, and yet he doesn't seem to be paying his employees at Amazon in a way that's reasonable. We see that here at a local level. Sometimes someone can get rich on the backs of their employees, and we see, oh, that's not quite just. If someone doesn't have enough money to live, they don't have a living wage, well, then that's not right that you would have more than you need. We look at all these things around us, and we see and experience the same things that Micah saw in his day, that he was inspired by God's Spirit to address. And Micah goes throughout all of this, and then the scene in Micah chapter 6 is God sort of hauling the people of Israel into a courtroom. But instead of making accusations against them, he says, what have I done? What have I done? And they have been going on to say, well, you know, what is it you want from us, God? You want more and more worship. You want more and more sacrifice. You want more and more and more and more. And God is saying the same things that we've been exploring already today. God says, no. Oh, people, the Lord has told you what is good. And this is what he requires of you. To do what's right. Or another translation says, is to act justly. To love mercy. And to walk humbly with your God. Now, those sound like three things, but they're all one wrapped up together. You remember the words of Jesus in Matthew 23:23 that we referenced. What did he say? That they needed to know more than the law? He said, you've missed the greater, more important things, which are justice, mercy, and faith. Here Jesus is referencing these verses, Micah 6:8-9. He says, this is what he requires you to do what is right, to act justly, to love mercy, to walk humbly with your God. Fear the Lord if you are wise. Real wisdom says, God is the creator, and he knows better than I do. Real wisdom says, God as creator knows better than I do for how I should live. And real wisdom says, if God has made me in this place, in his way, then I need to take care of those people around me who are struggling, who are suffering, who are in need. God's justice demands our reverence. And that reverence is expressed in the way that we treat the people around us. Oh, people, the Lord has told you what is good, and this is what he requires of you, to do what is right, to love mercy, to walk humbly with your God. Fear the Lord if you are wise. I think what's so beautiful about this as well is how it shows us even, once again, what Jesus is like. Because wasn't it Jesus who came humbly to us? And walked humbly here on this earth to show us what God is like, who demonstrated the greatest mercy towards us possible by taking on the cross, the punishment that we deserve for the things we've done wrong. And isn't it in Jesus that we see justice most fully expressed? The just wrath of God is satisfied, and also he now rules and reigns in justice to make things right here on earth. We'll be talking more about that in the weeks ahead. We can only just scratch the surface of that today. But all of this is seen most fully in Jesus. This is not just more commands, more instructions for us. This is to help us see clearly what Jesus is and what he's about. What his Spirit makes us like when we live in freedom as his children. We live rightly or justly. We treat others with mercy. We walk humbly with God. So today I want to ask you this simple question as we close. How are you walking? How's your walk? Are you walking in humility before God, with a sense of fear for him? Are you walking in a way that demonstrates his character to the people around you? Are you walking in a way that shows his mercy, the mercy that Jesus showed you? Are you walking in a way that shows the rightness, the goodness of God? And I want to leave you with that question hanging over us as we end. And I want you to consider in prayer this week how God would continue to shape your life and make you a genuine worshiper. Not one who's worshiping simply on Sundays, but worshiping on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Every moment of your day is offered up as an act of worship. Walking humbly with him throughout your week. I want you to pray and consider what it means for you to live justly towards your neighbors, towards your friends, towards those people here in our community. And I want us all to be praying that God would use us to display his goodness to the world. How is your walk with God?